Hey, it's Christine with Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Wayne Fetterman talks about the lessons he learned from ventriloquism.
Call is for ventriloquist for Minute Maid orange juice. I go in there with Buford's in the suitcase, and I go in the waiting room, and there must be 25 ventriloquists. And it is one of the most horrific moments of my life because it looks like a war zone, like a MASH unit. Like, the dummies are out, some of the heads are off, some of the arms are being screwed on.
Today on the show, comedian Wayne Fetterman talks about the lessons he learned in ventriloquism and his new book, The History of Stand-Up. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Wayne Fetterman, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I do hope you guys enjoyed the show last week. I loved it so much. I gotta tell you, this guy, he's a writer and an author and really a journalist. His name is Travis M. Andrews, and he is very interesting. First of all, we talked about how to get published in big, you know, media outlets like Esquire, GQ, you know, all these places where he's gotten his articles in, and the Washington Post, where he works now. So we talk about that. But then we talk about his new book, Because He's Jeff Goldblum. And it is really, really fun. It's a great, wonderful book. You can head over to travismandrews.com and you'll find it right there, Because He's Jeff Goldblum. And I had a Jeff Goldblum story. Do you have a Jeff Goldblum story, Fetterman?
I met him a few times, but I wouldn't say I have a story, no.
But when you were with him, truly though, is he just like one of the kindest guys and like so normal? He seems very normal.
That's not the word I would use to describe him, but if you want to use that word, go ahead.
You know, he's from Pittsburgh, where I'm from.
Yep.
So I'm just saying there's a down-to-earth quality about him. Even though he's 6'4", I mean, you're tall too, but I mean, he's 6'4", he really stands out.
My favorite thing about him is the first thing, because I talked to him about this, the first thing he ever auditioned for, he booked. It was called, Death Wish.
Yeah, Death Wish, that's right.
In 1974, and he plays one of the most brutal rapists in the history of movies. It's incredible what he does in that movie.
Wow.
And it's the character's Freak Number 3 or something like that. And it's so opposite his persona that he's of the quirky, stuttering, losing train of thought, speaking off the top of his mind, science guy that he's perfected. So it's what an incredible, but he's been booking, you know, I mean, everyone thinks about, you know, obviously that Woody Allen movie called Annie Hall, that won Best Picture. He has like one line in it and he steals it. I just saw him in Nashville. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't actually.
Oh my God.
I'm going to write it down. What's it on?
What's it on? I don't know. It's, you know, it's this amazing movie that Lily Tomlin, she makes her film debut in it.
Oh, this is an old movie. Okay.
Yeah, Robert Altman. Okay. It's a Robert Altman movie.
I had never seen it.
I'm going to say 75 is my guess.
Yeah.
But he's in that. He's just been in my life for such a long time. Anyway, so I asked him about that Death Wish. He's like, yeah, that was my, I can't do the impression, but yeah, that was my first audition. I was like, of course. He just has that thing.
He's so smooth.
Some people just have it, and he has it.
When I sent out my mailing list last week, somebody fired back right away. Jeff Goldblum hit on my wife.
Yeah,
and I thought, oh, Goldblum.
Yeah, I love it. So everyone forgives. Okay.
Yeah, he gets a pass on everything.
He gets a pass because he's so charming.
Yeah. It's really very fun. So go back, you guys. Listen to Travis Andrews last week. Great guy.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out.
Just a really good person. I'm really happy that we became friends. Anyway, but not today, you guys. Stick around today because I'm here with another very good friend I've known for a long time.
Not Travis. This is not Travis.
Fetterman, you're constantly doing me favors. You know that, right? Are you adding them up somewhere? Is there a...
No. I'm thrilled to be in a position to do someone a favor, even though this doesn't feel like a favor to me. But...
Well, I really appreciate you. I mean, you come on Story Smash and you've done my Hour of Power. And, you know, I just really appreciate it. And you're always there for me. So thank you. You're in my upcoming podcast, My Life in Three Songs. And I want to get you on like right at the top because, first of all, the book. And also, it's one of my favorite. Well, just the way you kick off My Life in Three Songs with that really strong, heavy Led Zeppelin song. It's just...
Heartbreaker.
Yeah, yep. It's just such a great way...
I hope I didn't spoil it for anyone, but that was the song.
No, it's just fantastic. And now, you know, you do have this new book, The History of Stand-Up, and I am so impressed, really. I'm very impressed, Fetterman. The History of Stand-Up from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle. It's not a real thick book, but it is so flippin' thorough. I'm really impressed. And I want to hear a little bit about how you did your research. I mean, I know we have the interweb now. I know you didn't have to go down to the library. And I know you know a lot of these comedians. But you went way back. You went all the way back to Artemus Ward.
Artemus Ward. You never worked with him? You never did sets with him?
Well,
No,
I am old. But
just so you know,
not quite that
I know
old.
You do shit. I know you do shows at Flappers.
Yeah.
He's a comedian that was working before Flappers existed, the original Flappers. He's from...
1800s.
Yeah, the late 1850s. He's kind of gets the bug to try this stand-up comedy thing. Not called stand-up comedy at that time, but...
Right. Well, there's so many things I'd like to talk to you about in the book. First of all, stand-up comedy, a lot of people might not know, it is a very American art form.
Correct.
Well, I just
think keep going. Is there anything else?
Well, no. I think that alone is really interesting.
No, it's like jazz. It's like rock and roll.
But
it's
jazz
like
is
basketball.
French.
Jazz music is American music.
You don't think jazz? You don't think there's jazz music in France, or that some of it originated there? Really?
Not at all. I mean, it's like they said. I don't know if you saw the Ken Burns documentary. It's a gumbo of a number of different things. Obviously, New Orleans, and there's a French influence to it.
Yeah, sure.
But there's blues. There's like a lot to it. But it's America. That's what we do.
Yeah.
We bring people from all different, and we melt together into one big gumbo. And that's where jazz comes from.
Well, that's interesting. But in the book, you know, once you get going, the comedians you speak of really are all American comedians. Pretty much all of them.
For the most part, even though Bob Hope, who is probably the biggest comedian of the first half of the 20th century, is born in England.
You know, I did not know that.
Funny fact, Bob Hope.
But he did not have the accent.
No. He's from Ohio, basically.
Yeah.
But he was born there, yeah. And so, yeah, partly because, I think it's because we have... Right there in our First Amendment to the Constitution, freedom of speech. So that's something, like, that's American. Like, we don't have to worry about the king and the king's men coming and killing us and stuff. If we say something wrong or we're, you know, getting shunned because we said something blasphemous, we're like, we're allowed to speak. So that's that. And then also, we are an incredibly creative, industrious society. So when we created this vaudeville circuit... That was like a big business thing, and now there's these huge theaters, 2,000 of them all across the country. There's only 50 states, so think how many theaters that is.
That's
and
so funny.
Like, for example, let me give you a great example. Here in Los Angeles, the Pantages Theater, where I don't know if you've seen shows there.
Oh, sure.
That was an old vaudeville theater, right? That was part of the Pantages, which was one of the many circuits, the Orpheum Circuit, the Keith Circuit. So, like, that's... And then they used comedians quite a bit in vaudeville.
Sure.
And that's part of the evolution of this American art form. Although there was kind of stand-up comedy in England as well, in the music hall. So I don't want to say I never say in the book that it's a totally American invention. I'm saying it exploded.
No, but I said it. Yeah, I said that.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, there's so many questions I have here.
Yes?
One is, do you think if you were alive in the, you know, early 20th century, that you might have said to your friends like, no, man, I don't want to be a contract player for Paramount. I'm not going for movies. I'm a comic, and I want to get on the circuit, the Orpheum circuit.
That's a great question. I don't know, because it seems like throughout the history of stand-up, the biggest comedians also were able to do something outside of that field to help promote their stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. Bob Hope, I was just talking about, became a big film star.
Mm-hmm. Sammy Davis Jr.
He's a singer, not a stand-up. But yes,
what, don't you also think he also did a
recorded
lot?
Records. And sure. Did all, yeah, so that's a big part of it. I talk a lot about Richard Pryor in this,
sure.
Who's unfortunately passed away, but he also was able to parlay his comedic persona on, and he was in Lady Sings the Blues, and he's in The Wiz, and he's in Car Wash, and he's in movie. He's like a movie star.
Sure.
So I always feel like comedians, it's one of the weirdest things where it's like, if you're just a musician, you can just do that your whole life. I mean, I guess the Rolling Stones did do a few movies and Mick Jagger, but for the most part, they're a touring band. But I feel like comedians, for some reason, have to add something else.
And so many can. Yeah, Eddie Murphy or, you know, all these guys that can branch out like that. I mean, they're amazing. You know, Kevin Nealon, all these guys.
Yeah. So it's like, so for somebody, even Brian Regan, who is like the touring comic of our time, or one of them, he's on a show right now. He's on like Amazon show or something.
I never met him. I'd like to meet him someday.
Oh, he's such a funny comic.
I bet.
So good.
I bet. And so, you know, I know that you teach stand-up comedy at USC.
And comedy history, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, at USC here in Los Angeles. And I know that, you know, stand-up comedy, it's obviously a very serious business. But in class, I mean, these kids are getting up and performing, right?
Yep.
And when you teach the comedy history, are you going to use this as text, your book?
I know, I haven't decided yet.
It's because so easy to read. It's so fast. It's really great.
Yeah, I might. I've always made fun of teachers who like teach the class and make the kids buy their book.
Yeah.
But the book is $11. It's not like one of those $85 textbooks.
And you really do you go all the way up post-pandemic. I mean, you even talk about the shows that are
We talk about this podcast. It's incredible how recent this thing is.
No, but you do talk about, you know, that there's drive-in comedy and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a question at the end. Why did you write like that you think now, when people do comedy now in Los Angeles, if my audience didn't know, a lot of times you go during the day, anytime during the day, and you sign up, you pay $5, you get 5 minutes, and you're in the show. And you call that a pay-to-play scheme. Why would you say that?
Because you're paying to play on stage.
Yeah, but you're getting invaluable stage time.
Did I use the word scheme?
Yeah. You say the latest pay-to-play scheme. And I thought, oh, my God, you think I'm getting schemed or scammed? I mean, like.
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah,
I go all the time.
Let me tell you why. And I talked to a comedian named Wendy Wilkins. Who's
one of our great friends. One of my great friends.
So I talked to Wendy about it. And she's like, those are my favorite open mics, the ones where I have to pay because everyone's serious about it. And they get a little, it's like. The only reason it's shocking to me is because when I started, there was nothing close to that. There wasn't even bringer shows. Mm-hmm. There was just like, hey, we're putting on a show at a bar, and we're going to bring people in doing stand-up, and there might be some money. There's probably not going to be money, but
yeah,
there usually was not money, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But it was like we were getting free stage time, and the audience was getting. So it was just shocking to me.
I see.
Shocking.
I see.
The people were paying. That's why I call it a scheme. That's probably a negative connotation. And I love it. I love this conversation, by the way, because I'm learning. I
mean, that's like saying that going to an acting class is a scheme, which there are plenty of them, and pyramid scams and all that stuff with an acting that
in the
world.
Same way. I teach a stand-up class. That's a bit of a scheme.
Yeah.
I'm
but
a schemer.
The thing is like, the open mics that I do, the hoot nannies, if you will.
Oh, somebody read my book.
I can't believe they used to call open mics hoot nannies. That's a really great little trivia. I love that so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And I run an open mic now for Flappers, so I can't really name it. But if I had my own, I swear to God, why is nobody calling it hoot nannies?
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It's like the best name for an open mic.
Did you ever read Steve Martin's book called Born Standing Up?
Yeah. The only problem with that book is it is too short. It's like this thin.
It's almost the same size as my book. So
yeah, but he's Steve Martin. There's a lot there.
I don't know. I love it. I love that book.
I know. I do, too. And I love Rich Schneider's book, too, Falling Through the Ashes.
Rich Schneider. Yeah, Kicking Through the Ashes, about the 80s. But in Steve Martin's book, he talks about playing hoot nannies. They call them hoots for short. In the same way, instead of saying open mics, people just say mics.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, I don't know why I didn't pick it up in that book. I flew through that book. I read that so fast.
That's the best book. It's the best.
I know. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book about Steve Martin. Anyway, Wayne Fetterman, you didn't really come here to talk about the history of stand-up, but
I'd be happy to.
I really enjoy.
I have a story ready to go. I have a story, a tangential story.
Well, I just find it all so interesting, this book. And like I said, it's not that thick. You can get it on Amazon or just at your website, waynefetterman.com. That'll direct people.
It's more,
yes?
Not through my website. I mean, yes, you can, but it's,
you'll get directed.
You can get it. Yeah, I'll direct you back to Amazon. But if you want to get it from a local bookstore, if you don't want to deal with that, you can order it from them and they can get it for you. It may take a couple weeks or something. Because it's not being, because unlike, it's a self-published book. So it's.
Yeah, you have choices. And so, yeah, skylightbooks.com, I always send people there.
Yeah, yeah, Skylights can get
it. I really like the cover, by the way. It's very, like, I don't know, I'm like rubbing my face on it. It's like very...
Embarrassing me. Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
No, there's something about it. It's very nice to touch.
Okay, I love it. I've not heard that compliment yet, but I'll take it, I guess.
You mentioned... really, almost everyone. Like, I don't know anybody you left out.
No, there's comedians that are mad at me that I haven't mentioned them, and it's that's the worst part of the book, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, but the thing is, in a contemporary way, you have to be very choosy about the last decade because things have changed quickly, and it's not just your opinion. This is what it is. Were you a Dane Cook fan?
It's not about being a Dane Cook fan.
That's what I mean. You have to talk about it.
I have to talk about Dane Cook. And
of course. That's what I mean.
Yeah,
you have to.
And and I think what he did, and continues to, he tours and sells out theaters all the time. But what he did in the early 2000s, 2003, I think he started that MySpace page, is incredible. And
it's,
it was the kickoff of the... It's mainly, in other words, if it was just Dane and he did that thing and then the internet faded out and no one ever used it again, I don't know if I would have put it in. But it was like, he's the start of it. He's the trailblazer.
Yeah.
It's incredible what happened to
him. It really is unbelievable.
You know, he hosted SNL twice.
Wow. No, I didn't know
There's not that.
That
many stand-ups that host SNL. He did it twice. He's So he... That's why I always, whatever. Well, it's not about whether I love Dane Cook or love his act.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not that.
Well, your friends have to understand that, you know? Like, I was looking for my entire chapter, and I didn't see
Sorry. But you recognize the scenes you're in, right?
Sure, of course I do. Listen, it is a thorough book. I love how you covered it all. And I can't even imagine somebody in the future writing a book about the history of stand-up and not using this as the guide, because this is the guide.
Well, we'll see.
I mean, you use a lot of, you know, you use the back, you use the index, you have a bibliography, you have a timeline. I mean, I'm just saying, it's part just enjoyment to read, and it seems to be part almost an academic book. You can cough. It's okay.
Thank you. I just had a cough. I muted myself.
That's fine. Don't worry. Oh yeah, I love your microphone, as you know.
Thank you. You're full of compliments. I should do this every day with you. This feels good.
And I have to tell you, this isn't your first book, as you know. You wrote that book about Pete Maravich, who was a very famous sports star.
Basketball.
I was gonna say if I said baseball, I would have hit myself.
I know.
So I said nothing. I said nothing. I just say, just don't even go realm. Don't go to the realm.
Too risky. Too risky.
It's too risky. That's not going to pay off. You know, in the long run, why should I know?
Well, look, it's interesting. I don't know. People listening to this podcast can't see, but we're doing this on Squadcast. And so we can see each other. And you're wearing a YMCA shirt, which is the, what does it say? Established what? 1916. Well, that's 19... crazy. They were around.
And then the bottom, it says Camp Surf.
Oh, okay. But YMCA was a very important part of the development of basketball in the United States.
Yeah, I could see that as a community center, as to gather people.
More than that, more than just that. Like the guy that created it at YMCA, and it was used to help like juvenile delinquent youths during the winter to have them to do something. It was called Muscular Christianity. It was like really interesting. Gosh. Yeah.
That's funny. Maybe you have a new book coming.
Then I wrote the book. It's in the Maravich book. It's all.
Oh, it is. Maybe that'll be my next read then. Maybe I'll finally dive into Pistol Pete.
Okay. That's a dense book, man. That is a dense
book. Yeah, I bet. Hey, listen, I have a sponsor today I wanted to talk about real
quick. Let's do it.
Because I have a feeling you have a lot of what I want to talk about.
I do.
That is swag. Yeah, swag. S-W-A-G. And I met a guy named Chris King who's just fabulous. He's actually a former teacher in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And he's just a really interesting person. He retired from his teaching position, and now he buys entertainment memorabilia, props, scripts, cast and crew swag, costumes, and more. He even has an I Dream of Jeannie costume.
Okay.
I mean, you got
it. Is it for a museum, or does he resell it on eBay? What's his move? What's the move?
He resells it.
Where?
Online at ibuyswag.com. Okay. He's a really dependable person. Okay. Yeah, like I said, he taught in a private school. He's known for his honesty, his integrity. He's very trustworthy. And if you know somebody that might be having like an estate sale or somebody passed away and they've got a lot of that stuff, if you just refer them to Chris King at ibuyswag.com, he'll give you a percentage of that, what do you call it, like that bounty. Right?
I don't know. Is it a percentage of the sale he makes if he sells it?
No, it's the gross sale. It's the gross sale, yeah. And he buys also a lot of vintage stuff, stereo equipment, Civil War stuff, comic books, all of it, automotive stuff, sports memorabilia. But really, the Hollywood stuff is just so interesting. And so many of us have like these old baseball caps from, you know, different shows we've been in.
I have a lot of stuff, yeah.
When you go to a rap party, they give you all this stuff. Like, there's a keychain, and then there's a shirt, and then there's a poster, and then there's a CD, and there's a thing. It's a lot of fun, actually.
You know what? Here's something I have that he might be interested in.
Tell me.
This is from Bridesmaids, the movie. I wasn't in the movie. It's a long story. I'm not in the movie. But I do have the rap party gift, which is a bridesmaid robe. And belt. Is that something he'd be interested in?
That's something I'm interested in. Holy cow.
I don't wear robes. This is something you should know
about.
Well,
this is what I'm talking about. You're going to give Chris King a call. I'll hook you up. I'm getting the finder's fee. I'm claiming that right now. Okay. ibuyswag.com. You guys, check it out. It is really interesting stuff. ibuyswag.com. And thank you so much for supporting Storyworthy Chris King.
Thank you, Chris.
I appreciate it. Yes, thank you. All right, you guys. Like I said, Wayne Federman is here, and he brings forth the topic today, lessons in ventriloquism. And I have to say, like in the past, I've been afraid of those dolls, and I don't think it's just me. I know it's not just me, because there was that whole movie called Magic.
Even before Magic, there was another movie called Dead of Night with, Lynn Redgrave's dad, Michael Redgrave. A British movie from the 50s that was about, one of the stories was about a ventriloquist. There was two Twilight Zone episodes about it. Like, before Magic, people were on to the fact that ventriloquist dummies are by nature scary and creepy.
Why do they have to make the eyes so big? Why do they have to define the
Because the mouth has to be able to open and close, so that's why they have
the hinge.
Little lines.
It's on a hinge.
It's hinged.
But can't, yes. I know, but can't they fill that with a little bit of filler or Botox or something?
No, because you can't. It wouldn't be able to open and close.
Well, maybe it should just be maybe it just like shouldn't be lips? So hinged. Yeah, maybe it would just be a little.
Are you familiar with the ventriloquist Senior Wences, who just did the hand?
He
would
sure.
Yeah, so does that creep you out?
Yeah, it does, actually.
Johnny?
But I do want to hear your story about lessons in ventriloquism, because you always tell a wonderful story, so I'm looking forward to hearing it. But before we talk about that, I did want to mention to everybody that we are still playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show, every single Friday night, live on YouTube and Facebook, and you've played Fetterman. It's good. I mean, it's not as good as the improv,
it's fun.
But
it's fun. I've had very good times, and I just get a kick out of Danny and Wendy. I did it once with her, and
Blaine is too much.
Yeah, and Blaine is ridiculous.
Ridiculously
like he adds
good.
So much value to that.
He really does, and I really appreciate him doing the show. But also, I like that, you know, some of the stories are sad and some are funny, and you kind of go through all the emotions very quickly with different people. And like last week, I had somebody playing in New York, somebody in Charlotte, somebody in, you know, Austin, Texas, somebody here. So it's, I love it, and I hope to sell that thing. That's what I hope. We'll see. All right, you guys, he's here right now. You've heard him talking, Wayne Fetterman, a comedian, an actor, a writer, a comedy historian, a podcaster, a musician, and definitely an author now that you've got a few books. And you are noted for many stand-up comedian appearances in clubs and theaters and on television. And like we said, you've got the biography of Pistol Pete Maravich. When you write a biography about somebody, do you take into the account if they already have a biography?
Well, there's been 6 books written about Pete Maravich. So he's a very compelling story in the history of sports, let alone basketball. But this was an authorized biography. I did it with his widow. Pete is no longer alive. And so that was the only reason I would have done it. Because there's been unauthorized biographies.
Yeah, that must have been very special.
I know people always say it was an honor. It was a complete honor and a privilege to go down to New Orleans and to Covington and go through his old diaries. I just, that she allowed us to do this project. I co-wrote it, by the way, with a guy named Marshall Terrell. And to do that was just, I hope the final product was up to the level that she wanted Jackie Maravich. And so
I bet it was. That's nice. That's good to know.
I loved it. It took a long time. It took 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is something else.
Yeah.
And then, you know, last year you did the Zen Diaries, or a couple of years ago, the HBO documentary, The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. And that's another one. You just have to dive in, huh?
Yeah, that was just, I feel like that documentary was just, had like a little bit of the gold dust on it, because Judd was doing it and they had like a father-son, brother's relationship that was very intense. And Gary left a nice trail of like what he was thinking with these diaries. And
well, he did write down so much. And I love that documentary so much. It's just so honest. It's just so honest about how difficult it is. You know,
there's
so
one clip
truthful.
Of him kind of struggling on Conan where he can't quite get it together. And like every comedian knows that feeling of just like, oh, I can't get the gears to lock up. And everyone can feel it and I can feel it. And it just, maybe not you, but other comedians.
No, definitely. I feel that, man.
I feel it. Yeah.
You can cut it with a knife. You can just. It's like walking into the middle of a couple's argument. It's like, okay, I'm going to go now. You can just feel the tension. And so now you're working on another book, which is another deep dive of George Carlin.
Another documentary, not a book.
And that will also, I'm sorry, yes, but that's also with HBO. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, that's got to be a real thrill for them to ask you then to do this one as well. I mean,
it's the same crew. Judd is doing it. I'm just a small part of it.
Still, I'm glad that they asked you. Yeah, but somebody has to have, you know, fill the role, and you get to do it. So it's neat to get to work with these people, and then it doesn't, you know, it's not a stretch at all that you write the book, The History of Stand-Up. I'm just saying, it all kind of comes together because you are in the world.
You should be my publicist. This is incredible. Yeah.
Well, speaking of your accomplishments, you have been in a lot of supporting comedic acting roles, like in The X-Files, The Larry Sanders Show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, which you just fit in so seamlessly with those guys, I guess because you are friends. I mean, it's just very regular. You know,
it's very regular.
I love that. And then, of course, you were seen in Crashing and Silicon Valley and Legally Blonde, 51st States and The 40-Year-Old Virgin and Step Brothers.
Yep.
And you were the head monologue writer for NBC's Late Night with Jimmy Fallon in its first season. And then last week you were on Jimmy Fallon again talking about the history of stand-up. And I got to tell you, part of what I loved about that was that on Jimmy Fallon, you're coming in on Zoom, right?
Yep. I'm right the same spot. This is the exact same spot.
I know. But my point is, as the audience, the view on the television is you're taking up the whole screen. Like, they don't even split screen that thing.
Right.
Like, it's just Wayne Fetterman on the whole TV screen, which if you were in person, it would just be you, your body. They would never do that tight shot. Never. So it's kind of cool.
Oh, okay. I didn't even think about it that way.
And you had an applause break, which was fun. And Jimmy obviously loves you.
Luckily, yeah.
He just sat there and just laughed. It's like, I want his job so flipping bad. I mean, oh my God. What a great job. Who in the world wouldn't want that job?
Host
just
it tonight?
Sit there. Yeah. Yeah, talk to your friends. Get some nice clothes on, you know.
No, he's incredible. He's just been very supportive, and I was thrilled that he allowed me on the show. Just
good to know. Anyway, I'm thrilled you're here. You guys can find out more information at waynefetterman.com and also follow him on Twitter at Fetterman. And also buy that book, The History of Stand-Up.
If you're interested in it.
Yeah.
But I love that you read it. Thank you very much. It's not big, but there's a lot in there.
It's dense and there's a lot of names. But of course, I love looking at the names because I'm just like, you know, I'm into it. I'm all over it. Anyway, great job. Congratulations again. And now let's hear about your obsession with ventriloquism.
All right, let's do it.
All right, put your hands together for Wayne Fetterman.
There's nobody here.
Why
are you saying put your hands together?
Because they, even if they're driving, I swear to God, they have told me they take their hands off the wheel
and they start clapping wherever they are.
Well, okay, that's my audience.
All right. This story is called Lessons in Ventriloquism. It begins when I'm 10 years old in a place called Silver Spring, Maryland. It ends on an island in New York called Manhattan. So it takes place over maybe 15 years, this whole story. And I hope I get it done in 9 minutes. That's my goal. So in the fourth grade, I noticed that I was a little different than the other people in the class one day when the teacher asked us would you rather do this book report, which is due next week, oral or written? Those are the options. So the entire class, with the exception of myself and this girl named Sandy, picked written. And I couldn't even imagine that it was even a question. I couldn't even imagine, you get to stand up in front of the class, you like the teacher, and everyone has to listen to you, and you don't really have to write anything down. You can just kind of make it up as you go along, and you get to be the center of attention, as opposed to sitting at a desk in your room at home writing a book report that's going to be graded for spelling and punctuation. It wasn't even a fair fight. And yet it was only Sandy and myself picked an oral book report.
Unbelievable.
So at that point, I realized, like, oh, maybe I'm a little different than the average person. Just like maybe nobody wants to stand on stage and have approval. I didn't even understand it. So anyway, so that was always in my mind. So I've always liked being in plays, liked attention. I didn't get a lot at home. And I became a very funny kid in school. Now, we ended up moving from Silver Spring, Maryland, to a place, the most, like I said before many times, the most insensitive, racially insensitive name for a city. Maybe in the United States, it's called Plantation, Florida. You know it. Yeah, thank you. You can jump in anytime. So I love it. So that's a real place. Again, people think I'm lying. They're like, yeah, and I'm from concentration camp, New Jersey. No, it's a real place. Plantation exists. But there, I become a funny kid in class, but not a disruptive kid in class. Like, there were funny kids in class, other class clowny type kids that could make the class laugh. But my goal was to make the teacher laugh as well as the class. I felt like it was a higher bar. And so those teachers were the ones that encouraged me to go into show business. They're like, you're funny, you got it, you're smart, you're a good student. So it's like, oh, okay. So that was the first like inkling this is going to happen. And then go to a magic shop and I see up on the, like above the magic stuff, a ventriloquist dummy. I was like, oh my God, I know ventriloquism. I knew Sherry Lewis. I knew Willie Tyler and Lester. There was a guy who did a Nestle's commercial where he said chocolate. I was like, that sounds like maybe an interesting way to try to get into comedy, because I don't think I had the confidence just to do stand-up at that point. So I bought the dummy.
And what kind of shop was that? Can I ask
anything?
You? Because it is a very rare shop to have that sort of a dummy.
No. In most magic shops, there's a dummy. Earlier, we were speaking about Steve Martin. If you look at the picture of him working at the magic shop in
Disneyland.
Yeah, above him is a ventriloquist dummy in the back. If you take out that book and take a look, because that was part, they're cousins. Magic and ventriloquism are cousins in that you're doing something to kind of amaze adults.
And to move their eyes or shift their...
Oh, misdirection. Yes, there's a misdirection involved. Misdirection. Yes, yeah. But there's a trick to it. It's all a trick, kind of. Mm-hmm. And a lot of magicians, especially now, do comedy in their act, right? They do like...
Oh, yeah, because they got to talk
about
because there's only one surprise. Right. And so they have to do a lot of build-up to make
that
aha.
Exactly. So I love it. I love it. So anyway, I get the dummy. There's a little booklet that comes that teaches you, but it's not good. But on the back, Juro Novelty, I still remember it. You can send away for an album. And there was a guy on the front of the album, Edgar Bergen. He was in a tuxedo with the top hat, and his dummy's in a tuxedo with the top hat. And a monocle. I was like, I don't know who this guy is, but this looks funny already. So send away for the album takes like a month to get. Like, I don't know if you remember, you would just wait to get stuff.
Oh, yeah.
In the mail. I had to send something called a cashier's check. I don't even know if they exist anymore. It was like...
They do, because if you don't pay your rent, they don't want your checks anymore. They want a cashier's check. I don't know why I know
this.
I'm just saying.
It was either a cashier's check or something called a money order. Money order.
Money order, yeah.
So I had to send one of those out. They didn't want my cashier. Anyway... the album changed my life for two reasons. One, take out the album, put it on. I'll quote you the album right now from my head. This is over 40 years ago. Hello, students. My name is Edgar Bergen.
And I'm Charlie McCarthy.
And I'm Mortimer. Well, I know it as well as know my own name. Concentrate. Oh, yeah, Mortimer Concentrate.
No, it's Snurd. Mortimer Snurd. I'm going to teach you how to throw your voice.
I'm going to teach you how to get laughs.
I'm going to teach you how to be stupid.
Like, so anyway, so I still remember this album.
Wow.
So it kind of teaches me how to do ventriloquism. But here's the catch. Edgar Bergen became famous as a ventriloquist on the radio, which is like being a mime on the radio or being a juggler on the radio. It makes sense. Right, Christine? But he was so funny with his characterization of this Charlie McCarthy character that I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I learned it from him. But here's the thing. On the album, there's old clips of old radio shows with him doing routines with Charlie that I never heard of. He's like, you can take these routines and use them. And I did. I kind of reconfigured them a little bit. But that was also the start of my interest in old-time comedy. Like, I was interested in Carlin and Robert Klein and all of those people when I was, you know, a teenager. But that was my first interest in, like, oh, there's a vaudeville comedians. Oh, there's burlesque comedians. Oh, this is fascinating to me. Hence my book that you're holding in your hand right now. Like, that was the start of it. So I became a very successful comedian in high school. I performed, believe it or not, at my senior prom with, so it was Buford, Wayne, and my date Stacy went to the Breakers Hotel. I know it sounds.
Are you kidding me right now?
I'm not kidding you. I swear.
That is so funny. And the Breakers Hotel is that big famous place in Florida.
Only five-star hotel in the state of Florida at the time. I don't know if.
Yeah. And that's in Palm Beach, right?
Yes. Yeah. How do you know that?
I've been there.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what kind of circles you travel in.
Well, as you know, I used to be a flight attendant.
Oh, okay, okay.
Took me around.
Yeah, so at the Breakers Hotel, I rented a tux for Buford, even though he had like a suit. Like I rented a new size 3. I still remember it.
Oh, that's so gross.
And
please
anyway.
Just give me a baby tuxedo.
Yeah, yeah. Little baby creepy tuxedo. Because sometimes they use tuxedos like in weddings, like they'll put the little kid, you know what I mean, in a tux.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, it goes well. It goes well. Every time I do ventriloquism, it goes pretty well. I decided to pursue an acting and stand-up career in New York City. I get accepted to maybe one of the most prestigious acting programs in the country. It was called NYU Tisch School of the Arts. You could choose a number of programs. The two most popular were the Lee Strasberg's, I can't remember the name of it right now,
the theater.
Yeah.
Acting.
And where they teach the method, or the Stella Adler Conservatory. So I took Stella Adler for a number of reasons, mainly because she taught Marlon Brando how to act, and that was enough for me. Now, Stella was not into comedy. Stella was into Clifford Odets. Stella was into, you know, Arthur Miller. I'm into Neil Simon. I'm into like a whole different thing. Doesn't matter. Sidebar. So I do ventriloquism. I do one-man shows in college. Ventriloquism was always part of it, but I started incorporating more stand-up, less ventriloquism.
Did you lose the tie and the get-up? You stopped wearing the tux? That was just for the prom.
That was just for the prom.
Oh, okay. So what did he wear then? And did you again
Buford always wore a tux, but not that a nice one like I got for the prom.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And so I start doing more stand-up. I start auditioning at the clubs. I finish NYU. I become a regular at the comic strip and then the improv and then catch the big three clubs. So I mean, basically, I've like sort of given up Buford, but I still have him on my resume. Get called for a commercial, and this is how it all ends. People want to know, how did Wayne Fetterman and Buford break up? This is how it ends. At a commercial audition in New York City on Madison Avenue, I go up there, and the call is for ventriloquist for Minute Maid Orange Juice. Never forget it. Remember it like it was yesterday. I go in there with Buford's in the trunk. I mean, in the suitcase. Go up there, and I go in the waiting room, and there must be 25 ventriloquists. And it is one of the most horrific moments of my life because it looks like a war zone, like a MASH unit. Like, the dummies are out. Some of the heads are off. Some of the arms are being screwed on. The one guy is putting like Vaseline on the eyes of his dummy so his eyes will glisten. They're all weird guys talking to the dummy, all doing the same kind of like, I'm going to leave you. You know, you're no talent. You're no talent. You know, that kind of thing, like arguing back and forth with themselves. I've been carrying you for years. I literally carry you. You know, it's that kind of thing. So I'm just like, at that moment, I was like, okay, I don't think I can be part of this subset of show business. These guys, and they were all kind of weird anyway. And you know, I'm trying to like, I'm working a catch. You know, I'm trying to be part of like the edge of stand-up. And so I actually did the audition, but when I went home. I took ventriloquism off the resume, and that was the end of my lessons in ventriloquism.
Wow.
And that's how it all ended.
That's so interesting. So essentially, you were discouraged.
No, no, no. I wanted to do stand-up, and I didn't want to be a professional ventriloquist.
In other words, it hit you in the face like, oh, the people that do this are very, very good. Is that what you thought?
No, it just, it was too weird and creepy for me. That's all.
Oh, well, I just said that to begin with.
I know, but it hit me in the face in a very dramatic way. You were correct. Yes, it's like
that
magic.
Really a funny way to end the whole thing. Now, do you still have Buford?
Buford still exists. A girl has a friend of mine who's, she wanted him, so she has him.
Okay, so you tell her don't ever really get rid of it, because that's
She takes it out every once in a while, and she keeps asking me to do a show for it, so I might see if I could still.
Oh my gosh, I would see that in a minute. I would see that.
You would?
In a minute. Of course. What I'd probably do is put one hand over my eyes so I could just see you, and then, you know what I mean? I'd just maybe.
What?
I don't see the dummy, because the dummy might scare me, so I might just leave.
No. You would love Buford. Buford was funny.
Well, listen, who knows how much Buford might fetch on iBuySwag.com.
All right. The original Buford.
You know, I would like to hear a documentary on Robert Klein. You mentioned him.
There is a documentary about Robert Klein.
And what is it called?
Can't Stop My Leg, I think is the name of it.
Really? I'm
I think
look
it's
that up.
Still called Still Can't Stop My Leg or something, but it's, yeah, it was really,
I'd
it was done
like
about 4
that.
Years ago. It was on Starz Network.
Okay. And that's tough. A lot of that stuff like disappeared.
I know,
like people lost their stuff.
I think if you do a little bit of a search, you can find it.
Have you ever been, well, I'm sure you have. You've been to an audition, and next door they're like doing Santa Clauses. And so then everybody in the waiting room, there's 7 or 8 or 10
right,
Santa
right.
Clauses, you know? One that I thought was really funny is, I'm always casual mom, pretty but average. I'm always the same, you know. Not
well,
pretty.
Well, can I just
God
stop
forbid.
You right there? Can I
no,
stop you
I'm
right
not,
there?
I'm not yeah. pretty. I'm average.
Right. You can stop you right there. That's the best thing about commercial auditions, is no matter what anyone tells you, no matter what anyone compliments you about, you look good, or thing, and hands, you know what you look like because they cast by type in commercials.
Yeah. They
Am
sure
I right?
Do. Oh, well,
you
of
get
course.
A real dose of reality of when you look at the people in the room. You're like, okay, I get it.
Well,
so when you said that, you're like, Avery, you're like, okay, this is where.
I want to look like everybody else in the room, because then I know I'm in the wheelhouse.
Yeah,
when
yeah,
When I
of course.
Go in and there's all different types there, then I don't feel good about it because they don't know what they want.
Right, I see.
But if everybody's blonde and kind of looks average, I'm in good shape. But I was going to say that one of the funniest ones I saw was over at, oh gosh, it was in Santa Monica, at the Village Studios or something.
By the way, the name of the Strauss, it's called the Actors Studio.
Yeah,
I don't know why
studio,
that blew
of
out
course.
Of my head.
Well, because there's Same. A lot of those. They all, everything is so similar.
No, but that's but the that is the most
that's
famous.
That's the big one. I know the Actors Studio. I get it.
Actors Studio.
I get it. But anyway, I was in this audition hall, in this audition room, and then all these mariachi bands started coming in. Mm-hmm. They were auditioning mariachi bands. So they were all in three-piece, you know, together, because they're a group, and they all have big instruments, and there's just like mariachi guys all over. It was great. It was pretty awesome. Huh. All right. You don't think so. I do.
No, I'm listening to your story. I feel like I've been talking too much this whole time.
No, don't be silly. I think that teacher, your fourth grade teacher, what a wonderful memory to have that, you know, that somebody actually took the time. Because I know you're from six kids. I'm from six kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if it's, you know, different mothers and fathers, whatever, when you start talking about those numbers, it's hard to stand out and it's hard to get extra attention just because of the logistics of feeding
those
people.
Of course.
Yeah, feeding them and doing the clothes, mm-hmm. laundry, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we had to do a lot on our own. I had to do a lot of my own. So you were lucky to have a teacher that kind of pushed you. That's neat.
Well, she didn't really push you. It was just an option. Do you want to do an oral or written book report? And I was
I know, but then they told you all along. You were saying that a lot of the
No, later on. In more in Florida. In Florida, they were like, yeah, you should definitely try this.
The oral versus written, yeah, that would be a no-brainer for me. Are you kidding? I'll just mumble my way.
Of course.
Yeah. But then you also hear about how only, I think, 2% of the American population eats sushi. And that's bizarre because I love sushi.
Well, I guess what? I'm in the 98%.
Well, really? You don't like sushi?
Won't touch it. Won't touch it.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. It seems so personal. Why?
I don't know. I like teriyaki chicken way better.
Yeah. Well, you can always get that there, of course. But are you saying you don't even
like the little
rolls?
Of course, that's
what
I get there.
But you don't even like a seaweed wrap, like a little tiny roll with a, like the uni?
I don't like the texture. I don't like the taste. The two most important things in eating.
Try unagi. That's the cooked eel.
You don't think I've tried the tapas?
I have no idea who you've been with and who has exposed you to what.
You don't think I've tried the premier sushi in my life?
Well, then...
Don't like the taste, don't like the texture.
What do you like to go out to eat? What do you like to go for? Like, what? Like, do you... Seriously, what?
Let me just... I have very simple taste. Like, I like a
diner,
turkey...
A diner.
Like a turkey sandwich is
Cantor's.
Delicious to me.
Yeah, I get it.
A cheese omelet is incredible to me. I feel like... Yeah. So I don't need things... I don't need anything drizzled on my food.
So would you prefer, though, like if you're going to go like a high-end restaurant, then I would go to like Daily Grill. I'm not saying it's high-end, but it's higher price, but it's regular food.
Yeah. I mean, I like food, but I just like I'm the opposite of snobbish. Like I like burgers, I like sandwiches.
I love the Mexican food in Los Angeles.
I like a Cobb salad without the blue cheese dressing.
Oh, I love a Cobb salad with the blue cheese on the side. That's how I do it.
All right. So we're different.
How about a, let me ask you this. How about a Korean barbecue? Interested?
Is that where you cook it at your table?
You cook your meat.
Again, I've done it. It's, to me, gimmicky. It's gimmicky.
I know what you mean.
It's okay. It's not bad. But again, I would prefer just to have, to me, the turkey dinner, the Thanksgiving dinner is incredible. Like that thing with the mashed potatoes and the stuff.
Do you seriously order that out of season?
Yeah, I've ordered that out of season, yes.
That is interesting. I've sat with people who've ordered that out of season, and I'm just like, did you just order a turkey plate?
Yeah.
I don't know. I find that, I don't even know you were allowed. That was pretty
I'm a
bold,
rule
breaker.
I know I seem like a very middle-of-the-road guy, but I'm a bit of a rule breaker. I'll have a turkey.
You really are.
I'll have a turkey plate in April. It's
one
crazy.
One time I was going, it was kind of like a meeting, and they said, let's meet at House of Pies, and I knew they were paying the tab, you know what I mean? And so, of course, I got to, fatten up or at least get some food and means to last me, like, at least today, if maybe not in the morning. And so... They said, what would you like to order? And then I ordered like the big Cobb salad and a side of a roll or whatever. And then they both were like, and they said, what would you like? And they go, oh, I'll just have coffee. Oh, I don't want anything. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I want to die. I just want to die. I don't want to be the only one eating. But at least I didn't order the turkey dinner. Hey, listen, you guys, get out there. Buy The History of Stand-Up. This is a quality book, The History of Stand-Up from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle. It really is. No, if you're into stand-up, if you don't have this, you're not.
A lot about vaudeville, the nightclubs, burlesque.
All of it. Yeah.
And there's some people in there, Elsie Janis, that probably a lot of people don't talk about.
Yeah, but then
Marshall
you go all
P.
the way
Wilder.
Yeah, all these old people, but then you go all the way up to Kevin Hart, selling out that stadium in Philadelphia, and you talk about Kill Tony and those funny shows as well. So I love how it's very current, but then you also do the past. So it's just great. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I've had a lot of reviews of the book, mostly positive. Some people are like, there's not enough in it, but I've never had anyone review the cover of the book like you did. That was insane.
You know what? I love this. I like this from Vulture. Comedian Wayne Fetterman has made it his business to know his business. That was awesome. I love that. All right, you guys. Listen, I got to wrap it up. But follow Wayne Fetterman over there on Twitter, at Fetterman. And then follow me over there as well, at Storyworthy. And don't forget to check out Story Smash, the storytelling game show, most Friday nights in May. Right. And also, hey, guess what? I got a gig in New York. That's right. I got a gig in New York on Monday, May 4th. I'll be at Gotham in New York. Come on out and see me, Gotham Comedy Club, May 4th.
Monday, May 4th is tomorrow, and it's a Tuesday. So what are you saying?
I'm going to be, hey, you guys.
What is happening?
It's May 24th.
Okay.
It's May 24th. Hey, you guys. Hey, you guys. Come see me in New York. I'm so excited. I want it to be tomorrow, but it's not. It's May 24th. It's a Monday night. It's 7 o'clock. We'll hang out. We'll chat. We'll talk. New York, you guys. Are you there? Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you again to comedian Wayne Fetterman. You're the best.
Thank you so much. You're welcome. You're very welcome.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.